If you're a regular listener of this show or other shows on CJSF, we'd love to hear from you. Tell us about what you like and why you like it, as well as ways we can improve our programming. To leave comments, please email cjsfprog@sfu.ca or call 778-782-4423. This information can also be found on our website at www.cjsf.ca.
Hi there, welcome to World Radio Day. This is Annie Roach at the Arts Edge at CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby Mountain. In honor of World Radio Day, I will be playing songs that reflect radio and music. I've got a couple radio tales for you, and I have a documentary in which I interview Marian Jorgensen about the history of radio on the prairies, dating back to 1938. To start things off, I've got a song from Canadian iconic legend Joni Mitchell. Off her 1971 album Hits, here we have You Turn Me On, I'm a Radio.
Driving into town with a dark cloud above you, dialing the number who's bound to love you. Oh, honey, you turn me on, I'm a radio, I'm a country station, I'm a little bit.
Radio Day was first proposed by Spain's Radio Academy in 2010. The following year, in 2011, UNESCO declared the first World Radio Day. Since then, World Radio Day has been observed annually on February 13th. And just to note, the day was chosen to coincide with the anniversary of the United Nations Radio, the UN's international broadcasting service, which was established on February 13th, 1946. Here in Canada, just as is traditional around the world, World Radio Day seeks to celebrate the importance of radio in improving international cooperation, providing access to information, and supporting free speech. The day also serves to promote radio as a means of communication in times of need and emergency. And just to note, among all the different technologies and ways that we communicate, radio is still the most readily available medium that can disseminate information to reach the widest and most diverse audiences in the shortest amount of time. That's pretty cool. After all these years and after all these technologies, it's still number one. And on that note, I've got a song for you from REM. It's a very cool song about the radio. You may have guessed. Here it is, Radio Song.
Hey, I can't find nothing on the radio. Y'all turn to that station.
When I was a kid growing up, if you were in the car, sometimes some people had 8-tracks, but for the most part, you listened to the radio. You know, you didn't have CDs, you didn't have cassette players. It was the radio. And in some cases, it was only AM radio. So up next, I've got a radio tale for you. It's Radio Tale number 7, Riding the Prairie Airwaves. And it tells the story of a road trip that I took with my family when I was 13 years old. We drove from Vancouver to the Saskatchewan prairies, and we listened to the radio. And so it talks about how music was an integral part of not only my childhood and that road trip, but how the songs reflected my life and were an extension of my voice and my own living story. So let's go to that now.
Radio Tale number 7, Riding the Prairie Airwaves. As my family drove across the barren prairie flatlands en route to a family reunion, the music of the 70s carried us across the miles. Karen Carpenter sang into the night air, lulling us kids to sleep in the back of the station wagon.
When I was young, I'd listen to the radio, waiting for my favorite songs. When they played, I'd sing along. It made me smile. Those were such happy times, and not so long ago.
Although the ride was long, the music kept me distracted and deterred me from being impatient to get to our destination. With the sun beating down through the windshield and the dusty prairie winds blowing through my hair. The winds carried the sound of the whistling air, the smells of manure, and the warmth of the day soaking into my sunburnt face. Meanwhile, Helen Reddy sang of good old Ruby Redress, talking to herself, something my 11-year-old self could relate to. After camping for the night, at sunrise we packed up for the long day ahead. At the Husky station, Dad filled up with gas and topped up the cooler with frozen ice. Mom and us kids went into the store to stock up on sundries, snacks, soda pop, and of course, Rothman's cigarettes for Mom and Dad. As Dad merged onto Highway 1 with Judd Strunk singing A Daisy a Day, Mom sang along. Waving her hands to keep with the beat of the music, my mom turned to sing to us kids as we ripped open our bags of Old Dutch potato chips.
He remembers the first time he met her. He remembers the first thing she said. He remembers the first time he held her and the night that she came to his bed. He remembers her sweet way of singing, honey, has something gone wrong? He remembers the fun and the teasing, and the reason he wrote her this song. I'll give you a daisy a day, dear. I'll give you a daisy a day. I'll love you until the rivers run still.
The day wore on as we tired from the heat, driving for long stretches with the prairie sun beating down. The inside of the car became a sauna so that the vinyl seats stuck to our bare skin and the cigarette smoke filled the confined space of the station wagon. Nearing the Alberta border en route for Edmonton, the car's engine began to overheat. Nothing a needle and thread couldn't fix, I'm sure. Before too long, however, we exited the freeway to small-town B.C. Revelstoke, population 700. Having driven for 2 days, pulling into every two-bit town every few hundred miles or so to fill up for gas and to stop for a bathroom break and a bite to eat, we were stranded as Dad waited for an engine part to arrive so his car could be repaired. With dusk setting in, we pitched our tent and camped for the night.
As I'm being followed by a moon shadow, leaping and hopping on a moon shadow. And if I ever lose my hands, lose my plow, lose my land, oh, if I
listening as the pace slowed down and the crickets came together in harmony, I knew Dad's home was near. Although he didn't say it, I knew Dad prided himself in bringing his family back to the land where he was raised, back to the farm he once toiled, back to the people he called family. The smell of the cows filled the air, as did the arrival of much-anticipated kinfolk. When we arrived at the farm, my dad's younger brother came out of the house and my cousins came running from the fields, inviting us to join them in exploring the farm. I looked up into the night sky, alit with stars, and realized that this must be the big open sky I'd heard so much about. I wondered why they had more sky than we did in the city. With crickets singing in the background and the adults drinking prairie-brewed ale and homemade cider on the back deck, we kids traipsed around the farmyard. As the night got long, my dad's sister-in-law pulled out her guitar to sing what I would come to recognize as one of the many songs in her repertoire.
The old hometown looks the same as I step down from the train. There to meet me is my mama and papa. Down the lane I look, and there runs Mary, hair of gold and lips like cherry. It's good to touch the green, green grass of home. The old house.
Spending time on the prairies was strange for me. My narrow city thinking left me naive to the world and the realities of the country, although I would later become aware that my ignorance left me arrogant. As we drove across the prairies, I wondered about the prairie folks we were going to see. They lived in towns that played movies that we'd seen in the city the year before. This seemed backward to me. I thought of their small-town street signs and sensibilities. I thought of them living in farmhouses that had no flush toilets, on acreage that was littered with cattle, livestock, chickens, pigs, and tattered and broken-down barns from the days when my father was a boy on the prairies. While my thinking would change, my immediate thoughts were crass. I wouldn't say I looked down on these country folk, but in my young mind, I thought they hadn't caught up with the city cousins. They seemed two steps behind us, like their clothes were different, and they seemed less fancy compared to those of us from the city. I thought they were out of date with the times. This thinking would change, though. After 2 weeks on the farm, I found myself looking at the country folk differently. I liked them. As our time on the farm drew to a close, I could see that they had more than us. They had the country as their home. They also had the city for when they wanted it, and always had the country to go back to. Unlike us, they had space to move around in, and they had the music, my aunt's guitar, and they had the crickets singing in the background. Camping on the farm changed me. There was much to take away from my family's road trip to the Canadian prairies that summer. Camping on the land, eating peanut butter sandwiches in my cousin's broken-down milk truck at dusk, watching my brother and cousin chase arthritic pigs around the farmyard, drinking baby duck at the family reunion hall, and seeing my Uncle Ray and recalling something strange and creepy, something I couldn't place. Eating macaroni salad, marshmallow salad, jello salad, Rice Krispie squares, matrimonial cake, Nanaimo bars, and tomato soup cake. Mmm, I love that tomato soup cake. Sitting around the fire each night, eating burgers, hot dogs, and watching my dad chew on pig's feet. Ugh. As my family made our way home, back the way we came, across the prairie flatlands, through Albertan wheat fields, soaking up the rays of radium hot springs, driving along the cityscapes into the sound of buzzing lights, I knew that home was near. The smell of manure had dissipated. John Denver was nowhere in sight, but his music lingered on.
Almost heaven, West Virginia, Blue Ridge Mountains, Shenandoah River.
Life is crawling into bed that night, reflective of my country cousins, and knowing that we weren't so different, the twang of Neil Young danced along the horizon, with its shadows dancing on my bedroom wall.
Oh,
city and country aside, I was grateful to have met my cousins. Maybe we city dwellers were more up to date in regards to movies and fashion. But if truth be told, we were the ones who were backwards. We were the ones who were behind the times. Too often, city folks were too busy and too distracted to connect with ourselves, our family, and our ancestral roots. Not to mention, too busy to make marshmallow salad. After all, it takes prairie folks to make a really good marshmallow salad. I should know. My mother was a prairie girl.
CJSF Heritage Minute. During the 80s and the 90s, CJSF would come into its own as a serious platform for independent artists and a forum for people to express ideas not present in the mainstream media. Summer 2002. CJSF receives a license from the Canadian Radio Telecommunications Commission to broadcast over the FM airwaves. February 13th, 2003, 7 p.m. CJSF goes on air at 90.1 FM, and we've been changing the sound of radio in Burnaby ever since.
Young, it didn't stop you coming through.
Oh, oh, oh.
If you've just tuned in, you've been listening to The Arts Edge at CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby Mountain, in which we are featuring music, stories, and a documentary about radio, about music, and the impact of music and radio on your life, on my life. And that tune was Video Killed the Radio Star by the Bugles off their 1980 album, The Age of Plastic. Up next, I have Radio Tale number 12 on the cover of Musical Influence. This narrative tells the story of how music came into my life through influences in my life, people in my life, and largely the radio. Let's go to that now.
Radio Tale number 12 on the cover of Musical Influence.
No dark sarcasm in the classroom.
Music has woven itself throughout my life and has touched on themes that reflect my lived experience. All the while, my early musical education has been informed by my family and especially by my older brother and older sister. Also by osmosis, it seems. Although my brother and I fought a lot in our younger years, by the time we reached our mid-teens, we became sort of like sibling friends, hanging out with some of the same people and going to some of the same parties. Perhaps this is because we are barely a year apart. For this reason, it seems, I was introduced to his music, either directly or indirectly. Aside from his music collection, my brother's room was strewn with stacks of Mad magazines, the sports section of that day's newspaper,
and the latest edition of the Rolling Stone magazine. As such, I paid attention, as is clearly outlined in Joni Mitchell's metaphorical lyrical content in California.
So I bought me a ticket, I caught a plane to Spain, went to a party down a red dirt road. There were lots of pretty people there, reading Rolling Stone, reading Vogue. I said, how long can you hang around? I said, a week, maybe two.
From younger sister eyes, it looked like he knew a lot about music, rock and roll mostly, which made him seem cool somehow.
He had albums of the most popular bands of the day, Led Zeppelin, The Who, Pink Floyd, Supertramp, The Stones. Then there were the solo artists, Meatloaf, Blondie, Pat Benatar, Bruce Springsteen, Elton John, and Ricky Lee Jones.
As Jones surmises,